What if learning a language isn't just for fun or something you add to your curriculum, but a matter of survival, identity, and being seen? Today we are joined by Marianne Hasso, Arab American educator, researcher, and advocate for multilingual learners who often arrive in schools shaped by entirely different expectations and realities than their own. In her work across classrooms and communities, Marianne examines what happens when students, often new to the country, the language, and the culture, are expected to adapt instantly, perform academically, and navigate a reality that's unfamiliar at every level. Her research and books explore the deeper issues: instructional inequities, assessment gaps, cultural misalignment, and the emotional weights of being constantly misunderstood. Today's conversation reminds us of the importance of truly seeing and hearing students, to recognize that their journey is not just academic, but existential. Because learning a new language means learning to exist and to be understood and seen in an entirely new world. Welcome to Echoes of Meaning.
Okay, my name is Marianne Hasso. I am a English teacher and also a credit recovery teacher. My background is I have a bachelor's degree in English from Cal Poly Pomona. I have three master's degrees and the PhD. My master's is all about literacy, sort of how to help students, you know, learn better. My PhD is focused on educational leadership, but my dissertation was on English learners. Most of my research is sort of revolves around multilingual learners. I'm Arab American. My parents are from Jordan. They raised, you know, they're from there, but we're from America. And there were a lot of barriers, language barriers, between me and my parents. So I would always, that was always the issue with sort of growing up in that environment. So I was able to take that experience and sort of transfer it into the classroom with the students that I was dealing with. So the English learners that I had when I went to the high school that I'm currently at, Adelanto High School, there was that barrier, just like the barrier I had with my parents. So I was able to take sort of all the tools that I had, you know, whether it's, you know, translating curriculum, translating what I was saying to them, and sort of modifying it so that they were able to learn, you know, what I was teaching. I work with many students currently in my credit recovery class that are English learners. Some in the past have it was too difficult for them to pick up the language through the computer program. They needed to be in a classroom with another EL teacher. But the current ones I have are thriving with the computer program and the classroom environment I'm creating for them, the friendly, inviting environment, and as well as me offering them tools to help them learn the language in the computer program and learn in the classroom, whatever classes that they're taking. In my district, the curriculum is pretty straightforward. Most of it, the current curriculum, we just changed it like 5 or 6 years ago so that some of it was in English, like they had the English version, and then the authors decided to translate a lot of the stories so that multilingual learners had access to the Spanish version or whatever version was available and the English version so they could switch back and forth when I was instructing. And so that's sort of a little bit about how I started this.
And how did you realize the struggles and the ways that you had to be able to communicate better and help your students from, let's say, maybe the inside?
The way I knew the struggles was I was trying to talk to them in English and they would look around like they had no idea what I was talking about. So I did a few things. I pulled students that were bilingual, both proficient in English and Spanish, and I would have them ask them to translate for me, which was helpful, a little helpful. And then I would use the Google Translation app. I would actually use it on my computer and just type in exactly what I wanted to say and then blast it, you know, so they could hear it from where I was. And then they were able to pick up what I was trying to say. And over time, as I continued to speak to them in English, they were starting to pick up the language, and Google Translate and all the other apps and things and tools were becoming obsolete, and they were able to pick up exactly what I was saying. If I noticed they were struggling with what I was saying, then I'd resort to other students that were proficient in that language, and I'd say, can you help me communicate this to the student? Which is very helpful for bilingual and multilingual students, having them in the classroom with their peers that are bilingual. Not only does it help them socially, it helps them with the whole learning process and fitting in with the school, because that is, you know, sometimes hard for our students. I have one student that she's French. I forget what country she's from, but she's like mixed with, I'm not sure if it's South Africa or something, but she's very proficient in French. So I was struggling with her because she only knew French. She wasn't able to pick up what I was trying to say. So I was able to use the Google Translate app, and I know a little bit of French, and I was able to do all that and communicate to her. And eventually she got it, you know, and she is now like successfully doing very well, you know, in the course. So I think the main thing is creating an environment where the students are able to communicate in their home language and make them feel comfortable, you know, using their home language at any time. And then slowly transitioning them into the English language, because that is what we ultimately want to do. They want to learn the English language. Their parents want them to learn the English language. So we have to sort of obviously interject all of those lessons and instructional strategies. But I also make it comfortable for them to, you know, to speak in their home language with me as well. And so it's easy to do that if they have the app, the Google Translate app, or any sort of translation app to do that with me. And being, you know, Arab American and coming from a sort of background that I have where we're pretty Americanized, but my parents weren't, that uncomfortable feeling that my parents were feeling, you know, in different social areas, I understood. So I try to be very empathetic with that, you know, that I understand where they're coming from, that they're scared, that they don't know, you know, they want to do well. And you just sort of have to give them that pathway to use what they're comfortable with and then transition them to what they need to learn and to allow them to use both in their demeanor in class and with their peers.
I get it. You said that you were working with something about credits with the students. How is that called? Credits?
It's credit recovery. So a lot of students, yeah, like I said, they come in as immigrant, you know, immigrant students. Many of them, they come straight. I mean, some just come from different school districts, maybe that they're not succeeding in, and no English background. But they have classes that they need to make up. Some are junior level, senior level kids, and they need to make up those freshman, sophomore year classes. So that's already an overwhelming sort of, you know, uphill battle for them. And so they have to do what's called A through G requirements. In the United States, if the in the K through 12 system, in order for them to, you know, to get into a four-year university or a two-year university, they have to be A through G approved, which means the courses that they take have to be like college level, college preparation courses. So that's why they have them in these, you know, a lot of English learners in these, you know, credit recovery classes. And then a lot of other students are just simply struggling with English, struggling with whatever it is that they're learning in the classes, and they have to be in this computer-based class to learn the language. The nice thing is about these computer-based classes is that they can translate everything on the computer in any language they want, which is very helpful to them. So the questions are in Spanish or French or, you know, German or Italian, and the choices that they make are in the language that they are, you know, comfortable with. But in the English computer courses, they have to type. So they do have to type those things in English. They have to type their essays in English. But I do allow them to type in their home language first and then to translate it. So it picks up all the errors. The computer picks up all the English errors, and the student is able to correct them. And eventually those errors become, you know, they don't make those errors anymore. So I think, you know, that's very helpful. In any sort of environment where students are comfortable in their home sort of culture is going to help them thrive with the English language, because, you know, English is one of the most difficult languages to learn. And there's a lot of similarities like with Spanish and English. So that's good. But like with the French student that I have, who's, I believe, I forget where she's from, but she is, you know, she was the one that I was having a hard time sort of helping her succeed through, but now she's thriving. So
what was your approach when you started working with this, let's call it complicated communication, like students at the beginning? And what did you find that ended up in your academic path being like this goal?
The French student that was trying to communicate with me, she had to use her app, her translation app, and she was able to tell me what she was having issues with, because I wasn't understanding her, some of the things that she was saying. And they're also very shy, so they're very soft spoken. You can't hear a lot of students. So I would ask her to speak up a little bit, and then she would communicate what she needed with Google Translate on her computer. And then I was able to respond to her with Google Translate, because we don't have a lot of French students. We do have a lot of Spanish speaking students. With the Spanish speaking students, I was able to, same thing, you know, with their peers, their bilingual peers, I was able to pair them up with students, and I would tell them, you know, can you, you know, speak to this student and tell me what it is that you're looking for? And they would tell the student, and then that peer who was proficient in both languages would tell me exactly what they wanted, and I was able to communicate what I needed from that English learner student. Or multilingual learner student. And then eventually I didn't need their friends, and they didn't need their friends. They were able to communicate with me in English, because again, they're talking to their friends, and they're, you know, the English language is already, you know, sort of seemed, you know, already in the vernacular, in the language.
Mm-hmm.
So, and eventually they're just more comfortable with what it is with, that they're supposed to master, because they are supposed to master the English language so that they can be A through G qualified to graduate, because they have to master the English language to graduate. But in my classroom, in my arena, I try to make it clear that it's okay to do both. And then they eventually, it's like dual language immersion, you know, have them do everything in both languages, and then when it comes time for the test or to master, they can do things in that English language.
I understand. I would like you to talk about the approach that you had with your students at the beginning. Like, you said that you were trying to know them, you know, not just having their background, but actually understanding where they were coming from and what they were going through. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so I do that. I do that with questions. I do that with just talking to them. You know, like in the beginning of the school year, there's so many changes with our district that, like, scheduling changes, and sometimes a lot of students leave. So I try not to make the workload too heavy. So I just ask them, you know, where are you from? What are your interests? What do you like to do for fun? I tell them a little bit about myself too. I love ice cream. I love running. I love cooking. And I talk about all the types of foods I like. I like Spanish food. And then I'll ask them, like, what's your favorite Spanish food? Or what's your favorite food from the region that you're from? Or, you know, because I still have American students, and I'll ask them the same thing. And I just think it's, in sending out, you know, just questions. You can send out surveys, you know, simple surveys. But I think surveys are kind of, they're hard for English learners, for multilingual learners. So I just keep it as simple as possible. Talk to them, and they'll tell me what they're like. They'll tell me what types of things they like to read. Through my research and just in my current day-to-day sort of work, a lot of multilingual learners love science. They love math. So it's always surprising to me when I get students, especially in the credit recovery class, that are struggling with math or struggling with science, because that's what they love. They love it. And in the computer program and with me, they succeed more than they do with their regular teacher. It's interesting that I'm an English teacher and I'm giving them these courses that are different, different subjects, and they're doing well in the computer program than with their regular teacher. And I think part of that is my knowledge and my background and sort of how to help them, you know, be comfortable in my class, feel free to use the language in my class with their peers and their friends, and to feel free using it with their work in my class. So that's the way I sort of approach it, like getting to know them and joke around with them, like just sort of, you know, make them feel comfortable, make them laugh, and I think is very helpful, you know.
Yes, at the pre-interview, we spoke a little bit about getting to know the human, right, behind the students, because I think that sometimes we, as people that belong to any kind of society or whatever, we get lost in the tech, you know, in the role that we're in and the role that other people are in. So when you're talking about, yeah, joking around with them and getting them to know you and asking them things about themselves, you are not just gathering information, no? You are creating this environment of trust and acknowledgement and sensitivity and allowing them to talk or to speak in their own language is like acknowledging them and seeing them and thank you for doing that, because I don't think that is something that only happens with multilingual learners, but with students in general. Like, it's hard for us as adults to see teenagers, to see kids, and remembering what it was like for us back then when we weren't seen, and then you grow up and then you understand life in a different depth, and it's like, okay, yeah, get things better, but it is very hard for a teenager or a kid not to be seen and just having all this information and grades and topics and this curriculum and this pensum is called, and how we call it here in Colombia, which is the list of topics that you have to manage so you can graduate. But what would you say are the challenges faced by multilingual learners and teachers overall?
Well, and that brings me to my next thought, is if you're a teacher, let's say Caucasian, and don't really have, you know, your own sort of background, it's going to be hard to relate to the kids. And I think that's critical. One of my students calls me professor. So I have to remind them, I'm not a professor. I'm your teacher. Like, so they already think of you as this high end person, but I try to remind them that we're sort of on the same level. You know, I'm not here to, you know, give you an F. I'm not here to, you know, help you fail. I want you to succeed. I want you to understand that if you're struggling, I will find a solution for you. As hard and as frustrating as it is sometimes, like with the student from, you know, I believe South Africa, I forget the country she's from, but who's French, I was having a hard time with her because we weren't understanding each other. So I had to talk to her English, her ELD sort of teacher, the one that's in charge of sort of her paperwork, you know, and making sure that she's doing everything. And then we finally got on the same page, and we didn't need the ELD teacher too much anymore to sort of come to an understanding of what the expectation was in the class. So I think, you know, just making it so like you and I are on the same level, we have the same experiences. And I think, like, just sort of bringing up my own background, I tell my students all the time, my parents were immigrants, you know, and I want you to know that, you know, I understand a lot of the situations that you're going through. So I will do my best. If I cannot help you here at this moment, I will find a solution for you. I'll talk to your English, your ELD teacher, or the ELD coordinator that's for the district, and I'll try to figure out ways to sort of help them. Because what are we here for? You know, I'm not here to fail students. I'm not here to help them, you know, go into their, you know, life not being prepared for the real world, because it is scary now with all this new administration. So I always try to make an effort to help them understand where they're coming from, that, you know, I understand where they're coming from, and also provide them with as many resources as possible, with as many solutions as possible, because that's ultimately what we are. We're teachers. That's what I went into this profession for. This is my passion, you know, finding solutions and helping kids succeed and thrive. I'm not trying to trick them, which, you know, there are people out there in the profession that, you know, do that. And that's not my role. My role is to, that's what I do. That's what I have 3 master's degrees and a PhD. That's what I want to do for my students, is help them succeed and find solutions.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having that approach. It's super valuable. You wrote a book, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What is that book about? Tell me a little bit about that book, please.
Well, so the main thing that the book is about, it's about multilingual learners. That most of them that I was dealing with came from Latin American countries, but they do, you know, also arrive from other areas of the world. The book also covers challenges, and just like we talked about, limited access to appropriate instructional strategies, lack of teacher preparation, you know, professional development, which is something that is not being addressed with districts. You know, the professional development is sort of revolving around what most of the teachers want and learn about, which isn't about multilingual learners, unfortunately. It's about other stuff. And I think that's where the lack of professional development comes from. The struggle of learning English while keeping up with academic content. So I think, you know, a lot of, that's what my book covers, sort of when the students are having, number one, they have to learn the English language. Number two, they have to take all these courses, which is overwhelming for them. So that's what sort of part of what my book covers. And then, you know, oral language primacy, you know, the false belief that literacy must develop only after oral English proficiency. So it's, there's a misconception out there about multilingual learners, sort of, there's a point where they sort of, the schools stop sort of teaching them English only, like they're just sort of thrown in there and in these classes and English only, you know, there's no modification of learn, you know, modification of the curriculum. There's no sort of, you know, understanding of their cultures. But the research shows that we need to continue with sort of those strategies like that we just discussed, that we need to, you know, translate documents if necessary. I mean, we do it in the real world when people come from different countries and they have to take the driver's license test, or they have to take all these tests that they have to do. They're in all their language, all different languages. So if we do it in the real world, why aren't we doing it in the school systems? You know, assessment are critical, right? So the student has to take a test and the test is in English only. So how do we make the tests more accessible to the students? You know, giving them options. You have a test in English, you have a test in Spanish, you have a test in German, you have a test in French. You can take those and show your proficiency. Other things the book covers are the emotional and psychological challenges, right? Anxiety. A lot of these kids come to class anxious and stressed out due to the cultural adjustment and the culture shock. Trauma from leaving home, their home countries, and sort of entering this xenophobic sort of world. And then fear and uncertainty, you know, regarding their legal status. And where I work, you know, we do have a lot of students that are, you know, I don't know the facts, but we do have, I think there are issues with the legal status of a lot of them. Other issues that come into play, academic performance, impact on academic performance and their own identity, sort of how did they maintain their own identity while being in this country. So those are some of the struggles too, and racism and stereotypes. Those are issues within the public school systems that I've seen students deal with. Inequities in assessment and education. So how do how do you avoid testing bias, you know, so that students don't feel alienated with the tests, you know, big words, big vocabulary words they have no familiarity with. So many assessments are designed for native English speakers, and misclassification of multilingual learners. In the past, I've dealt with students that are classified as English learners, but they're incredibly proficient with English. They do very well academically, but because the tests that they're taking to show their English proficiency is somewhat biased, they put them in English learner classes, which they don't need. Those are some of the other issues. Survey responses. My book also covers survey responses from educators. That teachers do recognize the inequities in assessment, but lack the power to change district policies. So that's another thing too. You know, the leaders at the district level are making the decisions for English learners. Some don't have the background to deal with, you know, English learners, or they haven't been in the classroom. They don't know what's going on in the real world. And it's not across the board, but there are many that don't really know what's how to sort of, what's appropriate for English learner students, the curriculum that's appropriate, how to sort of bring it down to their level, you know, keep it simple, you know, but they have a hard time with that when they're dealing with the testing and they're dealing with how the school district is performing. So all those things come into play, you know, in terms of, you know, challenges. And this is also, you know, where my books, what the things that my book covers, systematic changes or challenges, funding inequities. So right now with Trump, the funding is not going to be there for English learners because of all these decisions he's making. So, but in California, we're fighting it. You know, the Tony Thurmond, who is our Department of Education leader, he is, you know, he is prepared. So he is getting lawyers to, you know, to go in and sue, you know, the Trump administration. Oops, my screen is, to sue the Trump administration, to, because we need the money. But also California has a lot of other like funding pots, you know, to support English learners. So those are just some of the things that my book covers. But
thank you. I think that is a big fight, the one that of suing the administration and you know, because it is a mission to defend, you know, to protect the resources that I want to say we, but I am not in the States. So you have to guarantee the safety of your students and immigrants. I think that, and you would correct me if I am wrong, because it is a general conception of education and that it's within the academic system and the way we approach knowledge. The intention and the mindset behind the design of the curriculum, you know, and the way that we evaluate knowledge. What do you think? Is it like a structural problem? Is it something that is within the list of topics and the way that we approach those questions, that is not having in mind the diversity of the classroom? Diversity not only talking language, diversity meaning the differentiation between human beings, you know, and how we process information.
So The first part is, I definitely think it's a structural thing, policy thing. Like in California, the way we choose the curriculum is the teachers have to come to an agreement as to what type of curriculum we're doing. So if it is a great curriculum for multilingual learners and the majority of teachers don't agree with that curriculum, then that's what we go with, you know? So, and again, it's that experience that, it's the leadership, you know, what kind of backgrounds do they have and how are they bringing it to the decisions that they're making? And then the second part of your question is, I like classroom diversity. We have in California, it's a melting pot. We have every culture being represented in our classroom, but are those cultures being represented behind the desk? You know, yes, we have a lot of brown, we have a lot of Latino students. We have a lot of African American students. We have a lot of, you know, Arab American students and coming from immigrant sort of backgrounds. I don't think it's just a one size fits all, you know, behind the desk. Like you can have a teacher who is of the same cultural background of, you know, some of your students, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be effective as a teacher of multilingual students. You know, it's sort of, you have to be able to take all of it into account, you know, that we need to start hiring a diverse teaching staff, not only behind the desk, but also as administrators, you know, what type of background are we dealing with administration, those that are evaluating the teachers that are dealing with a very culturally diverse classroom, you know, because that also plays into effect, you know, in terms of how students are behaving and how students are being treated in terms of what's really going on. You know, if the student is a discipline problem, if the student is acting out, why are they acting out? What is the underlying issue that is really happening? And I think when you have a diverse teaching staff, not just of one culture, but multiple cultures, and a diverse administrative staff, and again, not just of one culture, but of multiple cultures, you're going to have a better chance of solving that student's problem. You know, they talk about referrals. They don't want referrals. They don't want this and they don't want that. But then we need to find solutions to these kids, the issues that they're having in the classroom. Is it a language barrier? You know, is it, are we testing them for these things? I mean, there are multiple times when I've told, you know, certain powers, you know, has this person been tested for language issues? Yeah, they may be speaking proficiently, but they may be having reading and writing issues. You know, my background, my parents didn't speak any English, and I spoke very good English, but I was still struggling in the classroom, you know, academically. That was like my younger years, but I overcame those things on my own. I read a lot. I wrote a lot. I just took education into my own hands. And that's what I did because I knew I wasn't going to get any help. But how do we do that for students that aren't like me, that aren't proactive, that aren't? And so that's what I bring. That's where sort of the structural part is. And I think the hiring practices, you know, they have to start doing that, you know, in terms of who they hire behind the desk and who they hire as administrators. Because that's all part of the big picture and what the mission is of the school. You know, is the mission of the school to make every culture feel at home and feel comfortable? Or is the mission of the school to do all these fundraisers and just make money? But what are we making money on? Are we helping these kids, you know, learn better? Is the money that we're, you know, that's where I come in. But, you know, that in my own classroom, because politics is so heavily woven into the American public school system, it's very hard to make those changes, you know, the unions and what the collective body wants. So that's a big challenge, you know?
That is a huge challenge. You spoke about the mission. Yes. What is the purpose of the education? A lot of people, I think, might look at what you're saying as an example of, if she could do it, then everybody can do it. Like, she learned by herself. Everybody, those kids need to learn by themselves because life is not easy. You're a teacher. You're a teacher, not, that's what I think, you might correct. Please correct me if I am saying something dumb. You're a teacher not just because of what you studied, but your approach to life is teaching and learning and analyzing the way you learn and then help others learn as well. You are a teacher, is that correct? Of, I am.
Yeah, I'm a high school teacher. Yes.
Yes, I mean, but I'm saying that you're a teacher not just because of what you studied, because of your approach to life and how you inhabit your own self, and that is why you could do it, and it wasn't easy. You know, I don't believe it was pleasurable. You know, like enjoyable, feeling alone and encouraged to do it by yourself because you knew nobody else was going to help you doing that, you know. And now your mission is helping others and educating yourself the best you can so you can improve the experiences of others because they don't have that same approach that you have. And that's why you wrote a book, and that is why you studied, and that is why you want to talk about this the best and with the more large audience that you can get, right? Because it's important, and I believe that as well. So it's not a thing of motivation. Like, yeah, they don't learn because they are not motivated, because they don't want to learn our language, because they are in our land. It's because we are different, and that's where the diversity term comes in. It's not just a difference in the words that we use to name things. Is language is everything. Is how you name everything around you and the relationship that concepts have with ideas and feelings is deeper than what we as societies give it credit for. And I think that is the biggest misconception that we as society members have, you know, regarding language, regarding teaching language, learning language. I understand that you're a high school teacher, yes? And I appreciate the difference that you make between teacher and professor. Like, it's important how they name you, because that name includes the way they relate to you, right? And if they see you as something like unachievable, something that you need to, how do you say, bow to, maybe? Yes. Like, yes, you're the professor, like a prophet, maybe, you know?
Yes.
How would you, is there any consideration that you have within the difference of the education of kids and adults in this case, in this area?
Well, and I wanted to add one thing to sort of transition into that topic is, you know, I'm very strict. So these are teenagers. So I am very strict. I have rules, I have policies, I have all these things in place. And they're very respectful towards them, you know, more so than the regular kid, you know, the American kids. But they're very respectful to the rules, and they follow them, and they have, you know, they have a lot of respect for teachers. And I think that's where the professor, the reason why they use that term is probably because they had a lot of respect for teachers. They look to teachers to guide them to, they want to learn, you know, multi-English learners, they want to learn. They want to succeed. So when I see, you know, when I see students that are not passing other classes, not mine, but other classes, I try to figure out, like, what is missing in this class? Why are they, you know, what is that person not providing? Or where is that gap in knowledge? But I've taught college students too. I taught at a community college for 4 years, three or four years, and I was still dealing with multilingual learners, you know, students that are just new to the country. And I just applied the same sort of concepts, but in an adult world, you know, and it was great, you know, Indian students, Arabic students, and all of the different backgrounds. But I always try to make it very clear to every student that, you know, I'm here as your guide, you know, guiding you through this, helping you succeed. But we are high school teachers. We are still dealing with children, you know, teenagers. So we have to give them the structure that they need, you know, in the classroom. I'm very strict, you know, and there are many teachers and the students, you know, sometimes they frown upon it. But the multilingual students, like the English learners, they're very respectful towards it because that's what they're used to in their home country, you know, very sort of strict environments. But I'm very like I have, you know, you have to come in, you have to sort of do what you're, you know, come in, start working. If you're struggling, raise your hand. And that's another thing too, sort of like learning how to ask for help with the multilingual learners is a thing, you know, and that may be where they struggle too, maybe where there's a barrier, you know, not knowing how to sort of communicate. So I let them know, you know, if you need help, raise your hand, holler, use your translation app. But they may be shy in other classes, or they may not know. I don't know what goes on in other classes, but you can sort of tell that there's, you know, barriers, because they're doing well in my class. I don't believe in failing kids or giving them D's. I just think that there's always a pathway to helping every student learn. It is my passion, and it is something that I will, oh, every day I'll try. I mean, I'll try my best to help them. And if all else fails, I at least give them, you know, some sort of a D or D minus grade. But I don't believe that, especially multilingual learners, they are my hardest working students, the English learners. So again, when I see them sort of, you know, not doing well, I often wonder what is missing in that environment, you know, or what is really going on. You know, I want to know. And sometimes they'll come talk to me and they'll let it out. I do let them know, you know, they can always talk to me. Obviously, we're teachers. We are, you know, in some ways, officers of the court. You know, we are officers of a legal system. So they may have a hard time coming to say everything that's going on because we have to report it, you know, or whatnot. But I do let them know, you can come talk to me about, you know, if you're having a bad day, let me know. You know, we can take a break. But, you know, I just think creating sort of that environment where when we're here, we have to be here. When we have to get back to their level, when they need us to be at that level, you know? Sorry, did I answer your question?
Yes, I mean, it's fantastic. And I am getting kind of emotional because I got a lot of trouble in school. I wasn't like a bad student or anything, but emotionally it was very, very challenging because the system is not kind, you know, at least here. When I was a kid, I struggled a lot with English, for example, right? And it's not, I am not in an English speaking country. I am in Colombia, you know, it's different. I am not saying that I get the struggle of a foreigner just being dropped into the system in a whole language. But I had a special teacher. Her name is Rosemary. And it got me thinking into the teacher's struggles, you know, because she was very kind. And my mom got into depression. It was a very, very tough moment for me.
I'm really sorry.
It was terrible, but she, as a teacher, she saw me and she wanted to be there for me and be emotionally supportive. And I saw her and I felt bad for her because she couldn't be that for every kid. A teacher has to be a teacher for a lot of kids. Like here, the classrooms are like 40 kids in a classroom, and then you have to, you know, she was a math, or she is a math teacher. I don't know anything about her life, unfortunately. But I saw her struggling, teaching all those loud kids, rude kids. And I saw her frustration because she wasn't being able to communicate with those kids. Teachers are normally not capable of communicating with the kids, and the kids cannot communicate with the teacher, and not within themselves, you know, within the whole classroom, because we normally don't see the complexity of communication, right? What would you, or what is your take, or what do you think of the struggles of teachers and that frustration that they can have and not being able to manage it, to manage that inability of communicate with their students and understanding them?
And I'm not gonna lie, I mean, I struggled and I get frustrated and I have a very short attention span. Like, and I have a very short, like, my patience does run out at some point. And, you know, I didn't know what to do, but then I started to wise up. So for those teachers that are struggling and frustrated, seek out your resources. You know, number one, on your campus, what resources do you have on campus to help you navigate whatever it is with your students? When I was struggling, I would always ask the EL teachers, what do I need to do? How do I help them? How do I help students learn the curriculum? And, you know, or do we just throw the students to the wind with the curriculum and let them figure it out on their own? But I couldn't deal with that. I'm living with these kids. You know, okay, that would be fine if they left and they did it on their own and I didn't have to face them. But I'm living with them. I'm living with them for 15 minutes per day with their frustration. I want peace in my life, right? I want calm in my life. I want production in my life, you know? And so I want the kids to be productive. And so I would seek English, you know, advice from other English learners or English learner teachers. And then when that was resolved, then there were the issues of, do these kids have a learning disability? So I'd try to figure that out too. But then they'd have to get testing for that. But our district, you know, they just now, you know, started looking at that with the English learners. What, you know, if they have a learning disability, because if all those other multilingual barriers are gone, then we have to look at that. You know, are they struggling with just learning in general? You know, so I would seek out all my resources. I would talk to the special ed departments, talk to the chair with special ed department, talk to the chair of the English learning department. If I wasn't getting anywhere, if I felt like I was still experiencing the same issue, they would lead me into the district, you know, talk to the district head of these departments and figure out solutions. So, or I would do Google searches, I mean, and look it up, research myself, like, what are some practical strategies to help keep the students calm and not so angry about their own sort of frustrations. The discipline problems kids have, you know, whether it's they want to leave class or cut class or yell at you or be mad at you or be angry with you as a teacher when you're trying to give them information or help them, is due to, number one, they don't know how to respond. They don't know how to, because that's not what they're used to. They're not used to people trying to help them. They're used to just being left to go, like, here, don't bother me. So when I came on board with this district, I was the, you know, solution provider. And sometimes they don't want people to solve their problems. They just want to sit in their problems. But I wasn't going to be that person and be the enabler, you know. So I think that's where you sort of start. Look at your resources. So if you're getting frustrated, if what you're trying to do is not working, look beyond. Look at your fellow teachers, you know. Ask them what's working for you, you know, or what's helping you with this student. I think that we need to try to fix the problem and not put the student to the side, because someone else is going to have to deal with them. You know, I've experienced it. Someone else is going to have to deal with them, and they're going to be stuck. And these kids are stuck. They're frustrated. So everyone's frustrated. So why not, you know, try your best to help them? And it's usually, the research says it's usually better to fix these problems when they're very young. And the problem with the American public education system is they go through this, they go through the system and they're just passed along, you know, they are not, the problems aren't resolved. And when you're young, you sort of don't, you don't show that side of your behavior yet. So they go through the system, and then when it becomes real, when they know they need this test to graduate and they're not passing, then the behavior becomes real. So,
yes, you're talking about a struggle, no? And about some sort of like a mission that you have, and you have to go through it, and it's what a hero does, you know? Yes. A hero is in this path where you have all these struggles, and you have to go through it and be brave and anything, you know. And that is like being the adult in the conversation. Like, you might be struggling with your own frustration and your own complexities and your own traumas and everything, no? And you have to work on yourself so you can heal all those things and go through it with your own students, and then have this bravery of getting the information and not just like laying down and feel bad about the thing, but actually like doing something about it. And that requires passion, no?
Yeah.
That requires a lot of passion and strength, and that is the task. Maybe it's a task, kind of a task, you know, of the educators that they have to work on their environment and work on themselves through the environment, and work on the environment through themselves, you know. It's, anyway, I'm sorry, I get a little emotional, and this empathy work that you're describing is beautiful.
What is the name? Please share us whatever you want.
Thank you. What is the name of your book?
It's a long, so I have three books.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So the first book is Understanding and Improving How K-12 Multilinguals Are Taught, Supporting Multilinguals. So that's the first one. And I actually have three books out. The second one is Research-Based Bilingual Instruction, the Impact of Multiple Modalities in a K-12 English Learner Classroom. And then the third one, which is actually my first book, that I took for my PhD dissertation. I turned my dissertation into a book. The Struggles of Minority English Learners, How Learner Feedback Can Improve English Skills. And you can find them anywhere, Amazon, any online bookstore, but they're available through ebook or whatnot. But I do find that, you know, a lot of the books are, they give you practical strategies, and they give you sort of the history and the impact of, you know, what's been going on in the past and through the years.
It's okay. I think we can start wrapping up the conversation. But I wanted to say something first before saying goodbye. You use this image of raising the arm, like asking for help.
Yes.
First, requesting the permission to talk, to speak in the classroom. But it's also asking for help, you know. And you said that kids aren't used to ask for help or finding help and support in their schools, you know, because yeah, everything we do is like demanding things from her and telling them what to do. And I believe that's super violent as well. But imagine, like, when you're a kid, especially when we're kids, I mean, when we're adults, we also have this problem. But especially when we're kids, we struggle a lot with naming things. And naming how we feel is very tough, because when you grow up, you realize, this was happening to me when I was a kid, and I didn't even... How are you supposed to know? You know? How are you supposed to know that? Because you didn't have that experience before, so you don't know what's actually happening. Asking for help and being able to give that help to students and students. I like to talk about students. It's a big word, a broad word, because it covers not just kids but also adults and teenagers and whatnot. Students are learning to name things in a systematic way, right? That's why the curriculum is for. You give name to concepts, and this process is called this, and it works this way, and the way to name, to describe this process are these words relating to each other. It's all words, no? And it's hard for us as native speakers, I'm talking myself about a Spanish native speaker, to learn this in Spanish, and now learning it in a different language is more complicated. And then when you're in a totally different culture, you don't know what's happening around you, and you're an alien, like a legal and a complete alien in a so totally different reality. And finding someone able and willing to help you navigate that experience is priceless. So thank you, Marianne. Thank you for sharing your knowledge, and thank you for what you do. I believe it is priceless. You cannot pay anybody enough. you cannot describe what you do unless you do it. And thank you for trying to explain that to us today.
Thank you very, very much for having me on and listening and hearing me out. And it was nice hearing your story as well. And you know, nice that you were able to share your story, because I think that adds to everything that I've been talking about, which is, you know, this is not, it's not a one size fits all.
Thank you for listening to Echoes of Meaning. My name is Camila Sabogal, growth marketer and media producer at Multilingual Media. And if today's conversation stayed with you, we'd really appreciate it if you left a comment or rated the podcast, whatever you're listening. It helps more people find these stories and the meaning behind them. See you next month, and please remember to listen.